The Outlaws Go A-Mumming.
"It's Christmas in 4 days now," said Ginger.
"I know," said Douglas. "Seems much longer than a year ago since the last one."
"It always does," said William. "That's what's wrong with Christmas. It comes too slow and goes too quick."
"I bet they used to have a jollier time at Christmas in the olden days," said Ginger. "You're always hearing what fun people had at Christmas in the olden days."
"Well, what did they do?" said William, with interest.
"They did mumming," said Henry, uncertainly.
"Mumming? What's mumming?" said William.
It's sort of acting," said Henry, still more uncertainly. "They were called mummers, and they did sort of acting."
"Well, we've done that," said William. "We've done acting, but it always went wrong somehow."
"But mumming wasn't ordinary acting," said Henry.
"Well, what sort was it, then?"
"I don't know, but I can find out. My father was talking about it last night."
Next day, Henry turned up at the old barn full of importance.
"I've found out all about mummers," he said. "They just dressed up and went dancing about into people's houses, and people gave them money."
"Gave them money?" said William. "What, just for dancing about?"
"Yes," said Henry. "One of them had to be St. George, and another the dragon, and the rest just anyone. And they danced about, and people gave them money."
"I don't see why we shouldn't start that again," said William. "Do you say there's got to be St. George and the dragon?"
"Oh, yes, yes, there's got to be them."
"Well, St. George is all right. I mean, we can fix him up with the saucepans and things, but the dragon's going to be a bit of a bother."
"I say, Freddie Parker's got a dragon suit," said Ginger excitedly. "He's going to wear it at the Morrow's fancy dress party next week, and he's gone to stay with an aunt this week. He'd never know if we borrowed it. I bet his little brother would get it for us. He'd do anything for a bit of coconut ice."
They discovered that they had tuppence between them, more than enough for their purpose.
"Come on," said William. "Let's go and find him now."
Frankie Parker was not hard to find. He was standing outside the village sweet shop, his nose flattened against the window, his eyes glued to a sticky mass of coconut ice that reposed on a dish inside.
"Hello, Frankie," said William.
"Hello,"
said Frankie, without removing his eyes from the coconut ice.
"Like a bit of coconut ice?"
Frankie wheeled round eagerly.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"Well, you've got to earn it," said William.
"All right,"
said Frankie.
"What'll I do?"
"You know that dragon suit of Freddy's, the one he's going to wear at the Morrow's party next week?" "Well, we just want to borrow it, just for tomorrow. We'll take care of it, and Freddy will never know."
"I'll get into an awful row if he finds out."
"We'll give you 2 penneth of coconut ice."
Frankie's eyes gleamed.
"A penneth now, and another penneth when you've got us the dragon suit."
"All right,"
said Frankie.
"Come on."
That afternoon, Frankie duly appeared at the old barn, carrying a large parcel under his arm.
"There it is," he said, "and I'll get into an awful row if Freddy finds out."
"He won't," assured William. "Here's your coconut ice."
Frankie seized his reward eagerly and went off nibbling. The dragon's costume turned out to be unexpectedly magnificent. There was a large head with a mouth that showed gleaming white teeth, and a suit with arms and legs made of some iridescent green material. It even had a tail, long and green and spiked at the end. William decided that he should wear the dragon suit, and that Ginger, in the character of St. George, should wear a saucepan for a helmet and a shield and breastplate of cardboard and string. Douglas was to wear his Red Indian costume, and Henry a paper crown and dressing gown, a vague costume that might represent anything. They assembled at the end of the village. First, they visited Miss Milton, and she was delighted, inviting them into her little dining room and letting them dance round her table. She even took the biscuit barrel from the sideboard and handed it round. Her generosity, however, stopped short at that. The next few visits were even less encouraging. Mrs. Burwash gave them a glacial stare and slammed the door in their faces, muttering, "You and your nonsense." Mrs. Luton did the same, and General Moult came to the door and merely shook his fist at them.
Tell you what, said William, I'll go into the next one on my own first and explain about it. Perhaps they've sort of not had time to take it in. I'll explain about us being mummers and tell them people used to give them money and all that. And then perhaps it'll be all right. You wait at the gate while I go and tell them. He walked up the short drive of the next house and knocked at the door. A girl of about 10 came to it. For a moment, she appeared surprised. And then she called, Mother, here's Freddy Parker. He's mistaken the day of the party. What shall I do? Mrs. Morrow bustled into the hall. Oh, poor boy, she said. Yes, his mother was telling me about that costume. Oh, what a shame. The party is next Tuesday, Freddy, not this. You must have got the dates muddled. Never mind. You must come in and stay to tea. Come in, Freddy, dear. William, not knowing what else to do, entered, and Mrs. Morrow patted his head reassuringly as he did so. William tried to open his mouth to explain matters to her, but a terrible thing had happened. Mrs. Morrow's reassuring pat had wedged the dragon's head so that the mouth would not open. He could breathe, just, but he couldn't move the head or speak properly. You needn't take it off unless you want to, Freddy, said Mrs. Morrow. Oh, and never mind about it not being the right day. Girlie here was just feeling bored and wanting someone to play with, weren't you, darling? William felt himself pushed into a room and seated at a table on which was a draughts board. You be black and I'll be white, said Girlie. Go on, you can start. Hurry up. She had a distinctly bossy manner. William hated the game and played absently, racking his brains for some means of escape. Girlie kept up a continual stream of criticism. Well, aren't you silly? Fancy moving there. Mother, Freddy is silly. He's moved so I can take six of his men. Isn't he silly? Mrs. Morrow went to answer a knock at the front door. William heard her telling the visitor, Oh, Freddy Parker's here. The poor boy's mistaken the day of our party and come in his fancy dress. He's staying to tea, of course. Oh, yes, I heard that Freddy was back, said the visitor. A horrible anxiety invaded William's soul. The clock struck 5. The caller left, and Mrs. Morrow returned. Tea time, she said brightly. Now you'll have to take your head off, won't you, Freddy? Or you won't be able to eat any tea. William was just wondering whether to make a dash for liberty when there came another knock at the front door. Girlie went to open it. A shrill scream came from the hall. Freddy Parker! But he can't be! He's here already! Then Freddy's voice was heard in the hall explaining that he'd had to come home because a friend of his cousin's had got scarlet fever and his cousin had had to go into quarantine. But it would be all right about the party because he'd never actually met the friend and... Girlie and her mother were staring in helpless amazement. And then, suddenly, he caught sight of William struggling in a last frantic effort to free his head before making a dash for freedom. Freddy uttered a howl of rage. His treasured costume, the costume that next Tuesday was to blaze suddenly upon an astonished world and put every other costume to shame. He sprang forward furiously. William leapt instinctively for the window. Freddy leapt after him, and the two vanished from sight.
How can there be two of him, Mother? Demanded Girlie. I don't know, dear, said Mrs. Morrow.
William was the quicker of the two, but his sight was considerably impeded by the dragon's head. He climbed over the Morrow's back gate, down the lane, through a hole in the hedge, across a field, back along another lane, down the main road, only a yard or two in front of Freddy. He sprinted in at a pair of big gates and fled up the drive, Freddy behind him, coming nearer and nearer. The outlaws had grown bewildered as William failed to appear from the Morrow's house.
What had we better do? Said Ginger. It's no good just staying here.
Let's go and do a bit of mumming, suggested Douglas. We might get some money. Then we'll come back and see if he's out yet.
This seemed a sensible suggestion. The first house they visited proved to be empty. The next looked rather imposing, and at first they hesitated about trying it. Ginger rang the bell. A maid opened it, and at once a harassed-looking woman came into the hall.
Who is it?
We're mummers, said Ginger. Can we come in and mum for you?
What? I never heard such nonsense. Go away at once.
Just then, another woman, rather like the first one, but even more harassed-looking, appeared.
"What is it, dear?" "They say they're mummers," said the first lady. "I've never heard such nonsense. Really, it's too much, on top of father being so difficult today." "Oh, but he's just been talking about mummers. He remembers them when he was a boy. It might interest him and put him in a better temper. One never knows."
The other looked uncertain.
"I don't think it will," she said. "But anything's worth trying. Come in then, boys. Wipe your feet."
The outlaws immediately had a horrible suspicion that, without William, the whole thing would fall flat. They entered a large room with French windows. An old man sat in a chair, his knees wrapped in a rug. He looked the most bad-tempered old man the outlaws had ever seen.
"What? Huh? Well, who are these?"
he said angrily.
"They're mummers, father. Boys playing at mummers. You remember you said you used to when you were a boy? I thought perhaps..."
"It don't look like mummers to me. No St. George, no dragon."
Ginger opened his mouth to explain that he was St. George and they were going to imagine the dragon.
"Oh, no sense in it. We had more gumption in my day. You should have seen our dragon. Get on with it.
The three outlaws began to dance about the room uncertainly, apprehensively. They were regretting having come at all. They weren't surprised to see the old man growing angrier every moment.
"Rubbishy performance! Rubbishy, I tell you! Get out, all of you! Get out! How you have the impudence to come here and pretend..."
The outlaws were turning to flee when suddenly in at the French window rushed a dragon, closely pursued by a boy. The dragon tried to get under the table, but the boy was upon him at once, and they struggled fiercely on the floor. They snarled and wrestled and punched and kicked for some minutes. The old man clapped his hands, laughing delightedly.
"Excellent! Excellent! I didn't know you got that up your sleeve. Most effective! I congratulate you!"
Finally, Freddy Parker sat up and gaped at him. He wanted to explain his intrusion and the dastardly trick that William had played on him, but he hadn't any breath. The struggle had loosened the dragon's head, and William's purple, perspiring face was now revealed.
"Splendid! Splendid!" the old man was saying. "Well, St. George should have worn some sort of armour, of course, but coming in at the window like that was a capital idea."
He dived into a pocket, took out a wallet, and drew from it a pound note, which he handed to William.
"Divide that among your company with my heartiest congratulations."
"Oh, thanks very much," said William. "That'll be 4 shillings each. I say, that's jolly good of you."
"Oh, not at all, not at all. Thoroughly enjoyed it."
Freddy Parker opened and shut his mouth. He didn't understand what had happened, but he realised that this was no time for explanations, especially since 4 shillings seemed to be falling to his lot. He and William had had a jolly good fight, and after all, it's an expensive hatchet that can't be buried for 4 shillings.